It is my pleasure to have Chris Carlin on. Chris is a ESPN radio host, a co-host of Canty and Carlin. You can hear it on ESPN Radio. How are you doing today, Chris?
I'm great, Drew. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. There's so many different things that I want to jump into here. But first things first, you recently made your full-time debut with ESPN. How is the show coming along? And what's your favorite part of working with Canty?
The fact that he lets me be an idiot. I've always kind of made this my mantra in my career. If you just let me be the idiot that I am, I will thrive. And Chris gets me. We've known each other for a couple of years. And, this has been tremendous. To get a chance to work with him on a regular basis, it's the best part, because he's incredibly smart, insightful, gives you a lot, very funny guy. And, I'm not the easiest to always kind of figure out or get along with. Or not get along with. I'm a pretty easygoing guy. But, he understands, what I'm trying to do, and I really appreciate everything that he brings to the table.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations on the gig, and really looking forward to seeing what you guys do here in the future, continuing to grow the show and everything like that. I want to jump into this.
I appreciate
this.
It.
Oh, yeah. Hey, yeah. No problem. I want to dive into Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban real quick before we get into some of the other things. So out of nowhere, Nick Saban is, talking to in Birmingham to some of the boosters. And I think that the way that his message was to come across was, hey, there's other programs doing this, paying players and getting them to come in. We may need to start doing the same thing, even though it's kind of frowned upon. Then Jimbo comes after him with, he might as well have done the press conference right after Nick Saban was done, because it didn't seem like he had any sort of thought process of, hey, I need to make sure I gather my thoughts. He just went off on him. What exactly was your first reaction to Nick Saban and his thoughts, and then Jimbo Fisher just going scorched earth, essentially, on Nick Saban?
Nick Saban never does anything without thinking about it. Never does anything. Never says anything without there being a broader message. And the message wasn't just to his boosters. It was really even more, I think, to some of the lawmakers in Alabama, because Alabama has this law on the books with NIL where money cannot come directly from boosters into any kind of collective to go to athletes. And that's not the same as it is everywhere else. So I think, number one, it is an overall looking out for his interests and the long-term health of Alabama football, because if other teams are going to be able to outspend you, Alabama's got deep pockets. Places like Texas and Oklahoma have deeper pockets because of all of the, the oil money that is involved down there. So it's everything that he was doing, I was thinking immediately, is obviously targeted at getting the message across to someone. I didn't really have any, I can't root for anybody in that, because Jimbo and Nick and every other college coach, nobody is guiltless in anything that they have done over the years to be successful. Everybody has got plenty of, skeletons in the closet, so to speak, when it comes to that kind of stuff. So I think Jimbo's saying it. He was particularly aggravated at the moment that they were targeted in what he said. But again, for me, there's a specific reason that Nick Saban pointed out the one team that had beaten them in recruiting and what the situation was there.
You brought up NIL, and obviously there's so many different things that are changing in college football. You got name, image, and likeness. You got the portal. You've got college football playoff expansion. You've even got conference realignment. If there was one thing that needs to be fixed first and most importantly, is it name, image, and likeness to you, Chris? Is it the transfer portal? Is it expanding the college football playoff? Is there a certain thing or topic that needs to be fixed in your mind first and foremost before any of these other issues in college sports in general, not just college football?
See, player freedom is what we are now identifying as a problem, right?
Right.
Transfer portal, that's a problem. were identifying NIL as a problem. Mm. They're not problems if you come up with ways to handle them. And what is it about? It is about player empowerment. And considering what the system has been for the longest time and the amount of money that's been generated off of them, there's nothing wrong with a correction to it.
Mm.
Now, does there need to be a little bit more of a common sense approach to NIL? There's no doubt. But I think water's going to seek its level here. You know, you have guys who are going to get $3 million out of the gate and get a lot of money, and you're going to get companies that look at it and say, wait a second, am I really getting my bang for my buck? And then all of a sudden, that becomes a line item. I think eventually here, over the course of a couple of years, you're going to see the money get a little bit more reasonable, at least in our eyes. Now, having said that, this is all on the NCAA and member schools for not being ready. I mean, they all knew it was coming, and they didn't do anything to prepare themselves for it. And so we are here at this spot right now. I don't think it's all bad. I don't think players having control over their likeness is a bad thing. Players getting paid is a bad thing. I don't buy that for a minute. And so I think what has to happen is people have to get more comfortable with it. That's really what it boils down to. It's not just about scholarships anymore. It's about, you know, doing where we're going to be most uncomfortable is the fact that it's going to be above board as opposed to below board. So much of this was happening, we just didn't want to hear about it or know about it, and now we know about it.
Yeah, I want to run this thought by you. So the way that I look at this is with NIL, and then we'll jump to some other things. Again, speaking with Chris Carlin, a co-host of Canty and Carlin on ESPN Radio, I think the way NIL should be approached is kind of like the way that golf is. So your scholarship money is your pay-for-play. Every athlete gets it if you're on scholarship or whatever. You get all the amenities, you get all the help for financial aid and all that stuff. And then your name, image, and likeness is like the endorsement money that with golf, the prize money is the scholarship for college football players. The endorsement money that golfers get, and they make significantly more money by endorsements than they do actually playing golf. That is the NIL stuff where, yeah, you play and that is your scholarship. But everything else that comes after it is based on who you are, what you do, and that's where athletes can't complain. If you're a third-string guy, you're not going to get as much money as the first-string quarterback. You're not going to get as much money as a three-star as you would being a five-star. Is that a good enough comparison, do you think, the analogy that endorsements with golf are like what NIL should be, and then the prize money that golfers get is like the scholarships that all these college athletes should get?
Well, I think it's completely fair. I think it's an excellent analogy, to tell you the truth, because it is one of those things where I'm sure, you know, athletes in other sports will be upset that they don't get as much money as maybe football or basketball players do, but that's where all the money is generated, and that's why it comes from there for those other sports to exist. So I think it's a really, really good analogy in comparing, you know, endorsements and such from golf. It's one of the best I've heard, frankly.
Thank you. I want to jump to, again, speaking with Chris Carlin of Canty and Carlin, the NBA playoffs. So there have been, over the last 10 NBA games, Chris, the average margin of victory is 17.6 points. Is there a problem with the blowouts that are going on right now? Because we got some great games in the earlier rounds of this of these playoffs, but for me, it's hard to be invested in a series when there's a blowout here, there's a blowout here, and it doesn't make it as fun to watch.
The problem is the three-point shot. And I love the three-point shot. I think it's a huge, huge part of the game, as it should be. It's exciting. It's great. I never want to get rid of it. What we're seeing this year in particular is because the game has become so focused around it, you see teams that have off-night shooting in the postseason, and they're going to get run by 20 when you're the Heat last night and you shoot 7 of 45. You missed 38 threes in a game. I went back and got this stat from the ESPN stat crew, and I think it tells the story. of the teams in this postseason that have lost by 10 points or more, they are shooting collectively, those losing teams, 29% from three.
Mm.
And you might even think, wow, that's better than I thought. Just to put into perspective how bad that is, there have only been two teams over the last 20 years that have shot less than 30% from three for a season. One of those teams was 10 years ago, and it went 7-59, the Bobcats in Charlotte.
Mm.
The other went 17-65, the 2002-2003 Denver Nuggets. So the point being, we're taking so many of the threes, and when a team just isn't hitting them and they're getting contested, it can really lead to this problem. I think you're going to see the league pay very close attention to this over the next year or so to see if it's a trend or just something that has popped up this postseason.
Should there be a better way that we vote for MVP, or that we have MVP and all pro teams voted on and decided? Because obviously there's a lot of controversy that goes into a lot of things. You know, is as good as Jokic is he really the most valuable player? As good of a player as Devin Booker is he really NBA first team ahead of a guy like Steph Curry or even Joel Embiid? Should we get rid of the positions? Is there a way that you think, and it doesn't even have to be just with the NBA, but even with the NFL and other things that have legacy and Hall of Fame status and money even at times on the line, is there a better way to go about this process, do you think?
Vote after the postseason is over. That's when it should happen. Because in the NBA, what are our biggest gripes? That guys, Embiid's a big gripe, but guys who, like Jimmy Butler, who had great postseasons, that doesn't get accounted for. And Jokic had an amazing regular season, but his team did nothing in the postseason. I think it shouldn't just be a regular season award. It should be an entire year award. And to me, I think that would do away with a lot of the problems and or snubs that we talk about today.
Do you think that we should have as much, Hall of Fame resume importance when it comes to all-pro teams and all-star game votes even as well? That's another one where, especially now with the NFL debating on what they're going to do with the Pro Bowl, how much should an MVP and all-pro and Pro Bowl selections be to your Hall of Fame resume as compared to a championship?
I think all pro is much more important in the NFL. I think first, second, third team really separates the great, great players in the league from the really good players. But I do think the voting on all-stars and voting on all pro, all that stuff has to continue because it is an achievement to get those kind of things. I absolutely think it's an achievement. The NFL, the Pro Bowl's a mess. To me, that's the one all-star game that's completely unfixable at this point.
And chopping it up with Chris Carlin of Canty and Carlin on ESPN Radio. Final thing I'll ask you, Chris, is what do you think, and it can be any sport, but what do you think is the biggest story in sports that is going a little overlooked by whether it be people in the media or just fans in general?
Wow, that's a great question. Getting a little overlooked right now. I don't even know if I can say it's getting overlooked because NIL's getting a lot of the attention. But I just think where college athletics is headed in general is so unpredictable right now that it bears watching. I'm blown away in the changes just in the last 10 years, let alone what I think is coming in the next 10 years. Is amateurism going away altogether? I think that's the biggest question that we are kind of facing collectively with it over the next several years.
That is definitely one of the most interesting topics, intriguing ones throughout the entire sports landscape. Well, Chris, appreciate the time. You have a blessed rest of the week, and really enjoy your show, by the way, and I'm sure a lot of the people do here who listen to ESPN Pensacola, and congrats again on the gig with Canty.
I appreciate it, Drew. Thanks for having me.